Rick Emerson radio program. This email says, Rick, Amish girls are easy. I grew up in an area with lots of Amish folks. There are two basic truths about Amish girls. One, they are all named Mary, or some derivative of Mary. Two, talk to Mary for more than 5 minutes and you're going to get some, guaranteed. If you can throw in some television viewing on top of it, look out. TV is the Amish Spanish fly. Signed, Jaimito. All right, there you go. It's true, man.
Yeah, I watched the documentary on it. Those girls are crazy.
The Devil's Playground or whatever, the Rumspringer, the Let Us Go Live Among the English and Do Cocaine. Yeah.
And their parents would throw huge parties for them, just stick them out in a field and buy them a ton of beer and, like, go have sex, go get drunk, have fun. It's like, how?
Blah, 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 party like it's 1599, blah, blah, blah. Ladies and gentlemen, the Ministry of Truth, it's Tim Riley.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, talk about a sticky situation. Crew spent the morning on I-5 after a semi carrying whipped cream overturned just north of the Portland Road exit on I-5. Happened around 6 a.m. just in time for the morning commute. How do you thank a truck driver for doing something like that? Traffic was able to get by in single lanes. Oh. And ODOT is spending several hours cleaning it up. It's not a tasty treat. It's whipped cream mixed with diesel fuel.
Mmm, tasty. Just like Mommy used to make. Mm-hmm. All right.
Meanwhile, a Self magazine is listing Tacoma as the most sexually healthy city in America.
Tacoma, Washington?
Well, who would want to have sex with anyone in Tacoma?
That's, I guess, really, if you live in Tacoma, I think your circle of social contacts must necessarily be very finite.
It's very low in STD, HIV, and sex education. Access to birth control is easy, and so is abortion.
Because everybody who lives there is a hooker. I mean, let's be honest. Let's just call it what it is. Everybody who lives in Tacoma is a hooker or a criminal. Nobody gets more health care and free rubbers than hookers and criminals.
They do have a higher than normal level of chlamydia and gonorrhea.
Is that a dip of some kind?
I'm not sure.
Right next to Clamato on the shelf. I had to go to the doctor. I had the Clamato real bad. He gave me a celery stalk and told me to leave.
Okay. So this story has been forced to the back burner, but it's still a controversial O.J. book and TV project canceled by News Corporation, the parent company of Fox. The dual project would have featured the former NFL star talking about how he would have committed the murders of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ronald Coleman, in the summer of 94. That long ago.
It doesn't seem like that long.
No, it doesn't.
Where were you during the Bronco chase?
Let's see, I was home watching on TV in North Hollywood.
Yeah, I was at work, mm-hmm. And this guy I worked with came to the guy named Tripp. I was in the production room, and there's soundproof, of course, a production room, but there's a big window. And I'm in there, and I'm cutting the spot, and the guy comes by the production room, and he raps on the glass, and I look up, and he mouths the words, OJ, and then he does the universal gun to his head hand gesture. He puts the gun to his head and like mimes pulling the trigger, and I just figured that OJ capped himself. I remember just sitting in the newsroom and watching that Bronco parked in Al Cowling's driveway or wherever it was for like 2 hours waiting for him to get out, and he never did.
So, Nicole Brown's sister Denise tells the Today Show, good judgment overcame greed.
Can I just tell you how thrilled I am about the American public? The American public has stepped up to the plate right on to the people because they're the ones that did this. They're the ones that pushed this, and they're the ones that got the show canceled.
Lie.
So thank you so much.
Such a lie.
Kim Goldman, the sister murder victim, Ron Goldman, said the American people voiced their opinion on the project loud and clear.
How many people are in this family?
It's about the dollar, and I hope that what we've done in the last couple of days with the support of the country sends a message that we're not going to tolerate it.
This whole... I'm sorry. I'll let you finish the sound bites here before I...
Well, I say the best one will last.
Oh, is it Fred?
It has to be.
Tell me it's Fred.
It's Fred.
He is the free bird of the Goldman family. Mm-hmm. All right.
You know, the American public doesn't want to be part of this, doesn't want to see this kind of garbage on television.
My son is dead! The thing about Fred Goldman is, he was incapable, it was sort of like that, this is an analogy I use a lot, it was like the fortune cookie, blah, 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 in bed kind of a thing. There was this time in the mid, not to minimize, you know, anybody's loss, but Fred Goldman just, more so than the rest of the family, was just crazy. I mean, literally, and the thing about him is, it seemed like he was probably crazy beforehand. It seemed like he was probably nutty, and he just didn't really have anywhere to aim it. He didn't really have any focus. OJ gave him that focus, and every speech that Fred Goldman, Fred Goldman was a lot like that character that John Belushi used to do on Weekend Update, or that Lewis Black does on The Daily Show, where, you know, John, and then it starts, and then, you know, it starts cavalcading down the hill, and the next thing you know, at the end, he's just frothing and tearing open his shirt and, like, setting things on fire and jumping off a hill and just, you know, my God, OJ! You know, and he was just all crazy at the end. Here's the thing that first of all, and I'll say this because I can speak honestly here as a pundit and as a journalist. I know that it's wrong that the Brown family and the Goldman family irritate me, but they do. I don't know why. I'm not saying, I'm not trying to minimize anything. I'm just saying there are people that irritate you for reasons that you can't really put your finger on, even though you know it's wrong that they do so. The Goldmans and the Browns bug me. They always have. They all have always irritated the hell out of me for some reason, and I can't figure out why that is. Secondly, I was in there watching the news last night, and Laura is in the Sarah camp, where she's like, I'm so glad that they've canceled this trash programming. The whole thing just makes me angry. It is my right as an American, and I mean this seriously, to wallow in depravity and the lowest common denominator of entertainment. And when did this country suddenly get some sort of conscience about, I don't want to watch anything that has to do with violence? When did we become so goddamn uppity and moral in this country that we're going to be horrified? Freaking, I remember...
You're yelling at the country for having some morals?
It's
got to stop.
I will not have this morality in my country.
If we get it right every once in a while, what's the problem with that?
It's hypocritical, though. It really is.
It is hypocritical, but...
We work for CBS. We work for the Columbia Broadcasting Systems, a company that conducted a long, in-depth, on-camera interview with Tim McVeigh, who didn't kill two people. Tim McVeigh killed by 268 people, and our company did a long on-camera interview with him on 60 Minutes. And somehow that's acceptable, but talking to OJ, who killed two people, that's wrong. It's 260. It is like the Eddie Izzard thing. If you kill two people, you go to prison. You kill 20 people, they look at you through a window forever. If you kill 10,000 people, then, you know, then it's sort of like you're a historical figure, you know? Pol Pot, you know, whoever. You're Stalin, historical figure. OJ, horrifying. Can't have him on television. It's wrong. Part of being an American is the right just to coat myself, just to baste myself with depravity and just slime 24 hours a day. And I alone among people will stand up and say that I was all ready to watch this. I was all ready. Did you go to Amazon and look at the book cover? First of all, the cover of this book is creepy. It doesn't say O.J. Simpson. It's just a huge picture of his face in court. And then it says, like, if I did it, and the if is in, like, white letters, so you can barely see it, and the I did it, it's like in huge red, and I have to say it, huge blood red letters. And it's just creepy. I sat and stared at it. I thought about making it my wallpaper on my computer, and then I thought better of it. Because you never know when Mark Whalen's going to walk in and, curious wallpaper, Rick, you know, so that's no good. But there's business, and I know I'm officially ranting, and I'll stop. I'll rein myself in a second, but listen to this.
It's about the dollar, and I hope that...
No, this right here.
Can I just tell you how thrilled I am about the American public? The American public has stepped up to the plate right on to the people, because they're the ones that did this.
Like
they're
the
ones that pushed this, and they're the ones that got the show canceled. Thank you so much.
That's entirely false. If you go to... We sat and talked about this every day for 2 weeks. We were going to talk about it for another 10 days. Everybody we talked to except for Sarah said that they were going to watch it. And finally...
Because you're such a bully about it. I bet nobody really wants to watch it, but you're the one who's just a huge advocate of it.
I don't believe that's true. Tim was going to watch it.
Probably would have.
Roop was going to watch it.
That's everybody.
Carlin was going to watch it.
These are all the people in his life.
Don't make... These are all the people I know.
Are you threatening an Instapoll?
I'm threatening an Instapoll. you go to Amazon.com. Now, I tried to sneak in an order last night before the book was taken off the market. You know, that book was already ranked number 11 at Amazon.com. Wasn't even out yet. It was already, based on pre-orders alone, that book was number 11. And it wasn't even on the market. So I want to hear this. America wasn't going to watch it. America, are you kidding me? In this sick goddamn country, are you honestly telling me that you think America suddenly had standards and wasn't going to watch it? What country? What color is the sky where you live? So, you know, the final note. I know it's just.
I have something that'll get you even more riled than admitting it.
Final note is this: the really frustrating thing about this is not only am I being deprived the OJ special, but here's the really tantalizing and frustrating thing about it is in the shades of Harry Potter. Thousands and thousands and thousands of these OJ books were already printed and shipped to the bookstores. They're already there in boxes. Just waiting for you to, Rick, come and give us your $19.99. Just Rick, come and give us the money.
The book is right here. It's so tantalizing.
What the better way to celebrate the birth of the baby Jesus?
Well, you know.
This is a backhanded way that you're trying to convince someone who works at a bookstore to bring
you
a copy.
Yes, it is, and I am. Thank you for cutting right to the chase. Stabbing right to the chase, as it were. No, because the books are all going to be sent back and destroyed, like that Beatles Bloody Baby doll cover for yesterday and today. The books, I read a whole thing about this last night. The books have already been shipped. They're sitting at bookstores. They're going to have to be returned to the factory, and Rupert Murdoch says that the books that have been printed and shipped will be returned and destroyed. I, Rick Emerson, am now... I don't know whether it's illegal for me to offer money for this. It probably is. I am not offering money, because that would be wrong. And I do not wish to run afoul of anything. I, Rick Emerson, and in no way offering goods or services or cash.
You want to give these to African orphans?
For the children. Mm. I would like to give the OJ book to children for Christmas. No. I would like to have I only need one copy. Well, you know that they're going to show up on eBay. You know that there's some guy in a warehouse going, screw this, I'm going to sell this for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I, Rick Emerson, right now, am demanding a copy of the OJ book. I know that there's somebody in the audience who knows somebody who can get me a copy. I know it. You know it. Now, I'm not promising you...
Get him the book so he stops talking about it.
I'm not promising you anything in return. That would be wrong, and not anything that I would do, nor would CBS Radio advocate that. I'm simply saying, as a journalist, as a spokesperson, as a pundit, as a guy, I'm just saying, as an American, I am now asking for a copy of the OJ book. I know there's one out there. So there you go. All right, I'm sorry. Here we go. I think I'm done. Hi, Tim.
Meanwhile, Heather Mills denies being a gold digger. The estranged wife of former Beatle Paul McCartney said she is not after the rocker's money. Heather Mills tells Extra's Dana Devon in an interview that 85% of her income goes to charity.
Number four.
Okay, let me...
If I was a gold digger, I would have a lot of money in my bank account. And why would I do 90% of my work for charity? I would have took all the huge contracts I've been offered over the years. I'd be worth millions and millions, which I'm not.
Which she clearly is. And she was... never mind. If she wasn't a gold digger, she would have just taken the... I think they have no-fault divorce, even in England. I think she's asking for like $1 million for every week she was with the guy. Get off it.
Mill says we just don't see her humorous side.
Oh, of course I have a sense of humor, but what people forget is, how can I have a sense of humor when I'm a charity worker? How can I make landmines into a fun, humorous thing? How can I make dogs and cats being skinned alive hilarious? I can't. So people don't get to see that side of me.
Okay. Let's
How can I make dogs and cats being skinned hilarious?
Okay, let's answer the... What did she say here with the...
Oh, of course I have a sense of humor, but what people forget is, how can I have a sense of humor when I'm a charity worker? How can I make landmines into a fun, humorous thing?
All right, the question is, how can we make landmines into a fun, humorous thing? Go. It's 503-733-2970. There you go.
Put springs on them?
Yes.
David, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Well, let's see. She's got a leg up on Lady Di.
Sorry, I didn't... Okay. thank you, sir. How can I help you? Really? Okay, there you go. That's it. Hope that was worth the time on hold. Here's Jim Riley.
Time for what's happening at CBS.
Let's find out... I'm sorry, that's me. Let's find out what's happening at... This is CBS.
CBS told the federal court that the government, their new zero-tolerance policy for indecent broadcast, is threatening to choke off free speech. In its opening brief at the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Philadelphia, CBS contends the commission's policy is flatly inconsistent with the bedrock principle of the First Amendment freedoms that require breathing space to survive. All we're asking the court to do is to reinstate old enforcement regime, says one CBS executive. CBS continues to ignore the voices... Is that what that said? CBS continues to ignore the voices of millions of Americans, Congress, and the commission by arguing that Janet Jackson's halftime performance was not indecent, says FCC spokesman Clyde Esselin. CBS believes there should be no limits on what can be shown on television, even during family viewing events like the Super Bowl. We continue to believe they are wrong.
All right, so there you go. So there's CBS, and I think that's it was like a circuit court, you said?
Yeah.
All right, so that's CBS who's still got, I mean, You know, to their credit, I mean, they are alone almost among broadcast companies in standing up and trying to tell the government to go shove it. So, good for them.
We can all feel good about that.
No, we really can. No, that's what, and I mean that sincerely. I don't mean that in an Eddie Haskell kind of way. It's a thing that makes me a little proud that they're trying to tell the FCC to, and I'm sure that they have a better way. I'm sure they don't actually stand up and say, get bent. But, let's see. Dave, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, you had a question about making landmines fun and exciting?
Yes.
Let's top them with whipped cream and throw them at clowns.
See? That's funny.
Uh-huh.
If you had a landmine covered in whipped cream, you throw it at the clown, bam, clown explodes everywhere. That's funny. Especially if his head lands in the lap of a small child in the audience. All right. See, the proof is he laughed. There you go. Well, job done. Thank you, sir. Mission accomplished. All right, that's Dave. All right, here's Tim Riley.
The lady who lives on the same cul-de-sac as former President Clinton died after a mysterious shooting on an isolated road that left her husband wounded. Sergeant Mark Simmons, a detective, said 55-year-old Peggy Perez Olivio died at the hospital. He said there is still no arrest. She was shot in the head and her 58-year-old husband was shot in the abdomen. The couple, he was a recently disbarred criminal defense lawyer. She is a teacher's assistant. Were driving home from Manhattan when they were shot. They were a very nice couple, great folks, and sweet people, said their landlord. A spokesman for the Clintons will not respond to comments yet.
All right.
Meanwhile, going on to B, former President Bill Clinton made a surprise appearance at Ed Bradley's memorial service in Manhattan this morning. Clinton says, like most Americans, he watched Bradley on television for many years and always was amazed by his stories.
The disarming smile, the disconcerting stare, the highly uncomfortable stretches of silence, the deceptively dangerous questions, and the questions that would be revealing no matter what answer you gave.
He sounds like he's tired.
He does. Bill Clinton, he is exactly right. He was talking the other day about George Bush the First, and he was saying that, you know, make no mistake, George Bush will speak at my funeral. It's ridiculous. Bill Clinton does not look good. He is aged. Normally, if they talk about how fast you age when you're in office, but he's aged a lot faster since he got out
outside.
Of office.
He says Ed Bradley knew how to gather information to get to the bottom of his story.
Ed Bradley was a brilliant, insatiably curious traveler on a relentless lifetime quest to get to the bottom of things.
Clinton said he realized he finally made it to the national political stage when Bradley asked to interview him.
I knew I had arrived in national politics when Ed Bradley wanted to interview me. I always preferred watching him interview others.
Clinton really is just all about style, though. That guy's just got so much charisma, and especially when you stack him next to, what's his name, W. It's just that guy, it doesn't matter what he's talking about, he really is just a Teflon president in so many ways. Rick, this email says, we need O.J. Pulling the O.J. book is un-American. It goes against all things capitalistic. Think about it. The book industry is reeling from lack of a new Harry Potter novel. These good businesses were looking to O.J. and his bloody, bloody fingers to save their Christmas. If you do not push for the O.J. book, you are hurting the American economy, comrade. Why does Sarah Dillon hate America? I don't know, sir. I just don't know. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Time for a snuff watch.
Here's your snuff watch for Tuesday, the Rick Emerson Radio Show.
Robert Altman, the caustic and irreverent writer behind MASH and Nashville and The Player, who made a career out of bucking Hollywood management and story conventions, died in an L.A. hospital. He was 81. Producer for Altman, Sam Castle 5, gave the Associated Press a story, the cause of death not disclosed. The five-time Academy Award nominee for Best Director, most recently for 2001's Gosford Park. He finally won a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2006, Altman was one of the most distinguished styles among filmmakers. He often employed huge ensemble cast, encouraged improvisation, overlapping dialogue, and film scenes in long tracking shots that would flip from character to character. Meanwhile, back at the Academy Awards, the 78th ones, during his acceptance speech, he took a moment to reveal he was a recipient of a heart transplant.
I don't know. It just occurred to me. I kept it secret. I mean, I didn't make a big secret out of it, but I thought maybe nobody would hire me again. You know, there's such a stigma about heart transplants, and there's a lot of us out there.
He made that joke about how he got the heart of an 11-year-old girl, so he figured he had another 65 years to live.
He discusses the origins of his heart.
Came from Tacoma or someplace in Washington.
Oh,
so usually people fall out of trees and hurt their heads, and so they take the heart out and rush it to wherever they somebody's waiting for it, and I was waiting for it.
Thank God for trees. Anytime, and I, you know, he's in a Knock Robert album because he made a lot of, you know, films. He did have like a 1 out of every 3 film average. I mean, because every, I got to tell you this, even if he had never made another film after this, everybody who works or tried to work or has worked or will work in Hollywood, everybody who's an actor, a writer, a producer, a director, anybody who has worked within the film industry, they will love Robert Altman forever for the movie The Player. Even if he had only ever done that film, The Player with Tim Robbins, that is right there. He would be canonized by everybody in the film industry for that movie alone. And, of course, he made MASH. He made Shortcuts. Which is a fine film. So anytime you see, here's a Robert Altman thing, even if you don't really realize it, anytime you see a movie, like Bobby is a good example of this, that movie with Joshua Jackson, or Crash, anytime you see a movie that has a whole bunch of celebrities in one town overlapping with each other over the course of a 24-hour period, that's the legacy of Robert Altman right there. That's kind of the thing he did better than anybody else. So whenever you see one long 24-hour day depicted with just a whole bunch of cuts back and forth between a bunch of storylines that are intersecting, that's Robert Altman. So there you go. And he's dead. So there you go, Robert Altman. There's your snuff watch. Get these calls real quickly, and then we'll take a break. Mike, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Bury them babies.
I'm sorry?
Bury those things. Bury those landmines on football field and Super Bowl. I hate football.
Okay. There you go. Thank you. We were asking how to make landmines funny. We have this. Rick, about landmines. They're fun and humorous if they go pop and then spew out confetti while blowing you into a million pieces. Let's see. Finally, Mark, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hey.
Hey. Hi.
Here's my idea. Sorry, I'm a little, first time I've called in, I'm all,
Be nervous. No. There are thousands of people listening. Hypercritical listeners monitoring your every utterance.
Rick. Okay. Convert landmine fields into golf courses. Invent a new sport called landmine golf, where water hazards are a thing of the past.
That is pretty funny. Congratulations, sir.
Successful first call.
And it gives a whole new meaning to the term handicap. Ha! See?
Oh.
Handicap. Handicap. See, because they're landmines. Mark finds it funny. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Mark, they're hyperventilating on the other end. All right, take a break here. We'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. We return with Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth, in just a moment. Coming up at top of the hour, we'll talk to Jim Roop. Later on, Dennis Pittenberg is going to be here as well. We got the Week in Geek and so forth. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. Too much pressure. What if he came back?
You have a dog.
Came back and he was dead. I'm not saying he will be.
So not only are you making me afraid of flying, now you're making me worried about my dog.
Yeah, but I'm not saying your dog would die. I'm saying what if I inadvertently killed him? Then I could just not come into work anymore. Who was that? Who was it that happened to? I think it was our friend Siegfried. And it is a moderately sad story, but he had a very old dog. And the dog had lived a very full life. The dog was like 16, 17, something like that. And the dog, you know, was getting up in years. And so Siegfried, Siegfried had gone on vacation or something. He'd gone on vacation for like 10 days. I think this is how it unfolded. He'd gone on vacation, and he's like, I'm leaving. And he lives with his brother, and he's like, hey, I'm going out of town. He's, watch my dog for me. Siegfried gets on the plane, takes off, and literally like 2 hours, it's sad, but it's, you know, very sort of darkly amusing. Like 2 hours after he leaves, you know, the brother goes to like feed the dog, and the dog has passed away in his sleep. And so for the next like 10 days, Siegfried calls from vacation. So I'm here in Maui. How's the dog? Fine. Really?
Yeah, he's playing with ball right now. Riz, put him on the phone. He's busy. He's taking a whiz. So, you getting laid? You know, just desperately trying to divert attention for this for like 10 days. So.
Oh, no, my friend Amanda's going to take care of Muppet. She's very good with
no,
him.
No, I would be... You can't put all that pressure on me. I'd be afraid of doing something wrong or whatever. You know, because then if anything goes wrong with the dog, then it's on my head. And then we can never talk to each other again. And it would all be bad. It's
you could go visit him, though. At least say hello.
Well, you're just going to Wisconsin. You could take him with you. I mean, that was probably too late.
Well, we're doing a lot of driving and traveling, and it's going to be really cold. And
he's
really
an indoor
tiny.
Dog. Yeah. He doesn't want to live in an unheated farmhouse. That's going to work out badly. It's max.
Nate just gave me a lashing. He's like, you're making it sound like I'm a hick. I don't know. I won't know until we go there. We'll see.
Well, I mean, look. I mean, now let me clarify a few things here, and then we'll resume our news. Are you sleeping in a farmhouse?
I'm sleeping in a house on a farm. It's like an old, it's an old house.
Is this a house where animals were once kept?
No.
Okay. All right, so it's actually just, it's a regular people house. It just happens to be on.
I think so.
See, the way you describe
it. Nate has described it as like a big wooden house. I haven't seen any pictures of it or anything.
The way you had described it, I thought there was like a house where the family lived, and I thought you were like sleeping out back like in a stable or something. I thought you, Lana, like the Virgin Mary, were going to be sleeping in a nativity or whatever.
No, I'm sleeping in the house, but I guess it has no heat in it.
Fantastic.
And upstairs hasn't been lived in for years, so.
Enjoy. It's just you and Mrs. Bates up there. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
That's
my fault. There you go.
Oh, don't worry about it. The Humane Society says don't feed your dog table scraps, since we talked about dogs. Don't let them eat chicken bones. And close an oven door properly, because cats are so stupid, they'll jump right in.
Well, there you go. That's a little natural selection at work there. I'm going to get in the oven. Go ahead. Have fun with that. Seriously, your cat crawls into the oven. That's just, you know what it is. That's a little bit of nature's self cleansing going on right there. Although I got my annual my thing in the mail. The great and terrible thing about having a dog that tries to, you know, it's constantly trying to kill itself, like Max. Max is constantly, hey, is that a pound of grapes? Let me eat those. And you go to Dove Lewis, or, you know, wherever you go, and then you're on the mailing list for Dove Lewis for Life, which is the 24-hour animal hospital. Mm-hmm. And the great and terrible thing about that, I'm glad that a place like Dove, I don't want to turn this to old dog talk, but I'm glad that place exists, because, you know, when my dog eats a pound of Baker's chocolate, really, you like to be able to go there and fork over $900 to have your dog's stomach pumped. But then you get these things three times a year. It's that season once again, when dogs eat pounds of chocolate and holiday ribbons. You know, won't you please give? And on the front, there's always some picture that's designed just to get the money out of your pocket. And I got my thing from Double Lewis in the mail this year, and I swear to God, like, one of the first pictures there is a picture of a dog, like...
With one eye.
No, but he is... No.
With
no,
three legs.
No, but he's... Yeah, he's got a peg leg.
Two tails.
No, it's a dog with a peg leg and just a whole lot of, like... Lucky here, you know, ran into an electric fence and then was attacked by a cow. You know, or just some... And he's like, fine, I'll give. Just quit sending me pictures of peg leg dogs.
Here's Tim Riley. But here come one of the stories. We love this time of the year.
All right.
Of all the traditional Thanksgiving dishes one can make, the turkey must be the most daunting. However, former White House chef Stephen Gunta says one might not feel intimidated by the bird.
I think it's actually easier than some dishes. I mean, you're roasting one thing in the oven, you have pretty good control over it. And, you know, it is something that holds well. So if you take the turkey out of the oven and let it rest before you carve it, you can keep it warm for 30 or 40 minutes.
Who are these people that suddenly... Why is cooking... I don't understand this. Why is cooking on Thanksgiving harder than cooking on any other day? This is like the insistence that talking on a cell phone somehow makes it harder to drive. If you can cook on the day before Thanksgiving without issue, if you can cook on the day after Thanksgiving without issue, it seems like you ought to be able to cook on Thanksgiving without having to call a goddamn helpline every 20 minutes to figure out how to turn on the oven and stick in a bird.
A cat could jump in there.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, make sure you spin up on more cranberry sauce. Laura Jeppers, the registered dietitian of the Cleveland Cranberry Clinic, says fresh cranberry.
Is that with K's?
Yeah. And 100% cranberry juice offer the greatest of health benefits.
The higher the concentration of the tannins that someone's going to consume, there's going to be more of positive effects from that. So something that is, you know, 100% juice or a whole cranberry is going to be, that concentration will be higher.
Okay. And
she makes about $80,000 a year.
She's where?
The Cleveland cranberry.
Like, I...
Pepper clappers.
The clanberry.
The clanberry clinic.
Of Idaho.
Here at the Clanberry Clinic. We, is that right next to the Cleveland Clown College?
Mm-hmm. All right. Fantastic.
Okay.
Clanberry.
Oh, those poor people in Oklahoma. It seems the rising energy costs have a lot to do with the higher price for turkey and all the trimmings this year.
Other items showing a slight price increase this year include a 12-ounce package of fresh cranberries.
What kind of
that's selling for about $2.12. 3 pounds of sweet potatoes, average price of $2.91.
That's just to feed one guy.
A 14-ounce package of cubed stuffing goes for $2.52.
I know that I have this same lament every year, but there's a whole lot of crap that people eat on Thanksgiving that we don't really like. This is we were talking about why I'm not into Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, with the exception of the ham or the turkey or whatever your turkey substitute of choice is, in this case it's corn, which is our meat substitute of choice on the Rick Emerson Show. All of the other crap that you eat at Thanksgiving is stuff nobody really likes. Nobody really likes any of the other Thanksgiving food. I'm not going to do it.
They're told you like it.
That's exactly what it is. You like stuffing. Eat it now.
Oh, I love stuffing.
You don't. Because
I really do.
If you did, you'd be eating it the rest of the year.
Well, I don't cook, so that's the only time of the year I get it.
You'd be making Nate cook it the rest of the year. All right, here's Jim Riley.
Well, you're enjoying fine fellowship in the kitchen cooking. Keep in mind, the kids are choking on toys in the living room.
There's a special cup. It's about the size of a toilet paper holder. It's actually a little bit smaller. And if a toy can fit inside of that special cup that they use to test, that toy has to be labeled as a small parts toy.
If not, children will choke.
Well, you know, cats crawl into ovens, children stuff crap into their mouths.
We're here to do everything we can to ruin the holiday for you.
Get your kid one of those little Hannibal Lecter masks. Keep it on until he's about 15. There you go. Problem solved.
Here's a Geek Watch.
Here's
a double Geek
Watch. This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you... It's
just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn shit. You got it?
Energize.
Well, Harry Potter's first on-screen kiss has been revealed in a new trailer promoting The Order of the Phoenix, movie number 5 in the Potter series. The actor who plays the boy wizard, Daniel Radcliffe, said shooting the scene, which it took 30 takes to get it right, was daunting. But it would have been more nerve-wracking if I was doing it with somebody I didn't like, said the boy. He laughs off reports he had insisted on shooting the scene several times with co-star Katie Leung because he enjoyed it so much. It was reported that we had a huge amount of takes, but actually, you do that number on any scene. Once you've covered it from all the camera angles, you've done it about 30 times.
That chick who plays Cho Chang is really cute, though. I mean, unless she's underage, in which case she's a... Is she?
I think she has to be. She looks so young.
He's not. He's like 18, isn't he? Well, whatever. Anyway, she's a very adorable...
She'll grow up to be a fine woman.
Thank you, Tim. That's exactly what I'm saying. Girl, you will be a woman soon. Okay.
Meanwhile, Peter Jackson says he will not be directing a movie based on J.R.R. Tolkien's novel, The Hobbit, or a planned prequel to Lord of the Rings. In a letter posted on thenorong.com.
I believe that's the One Ring. .com. The nearing.com. Genius. Ladies and gentlemen, the Oneaters. Ow. I just hit my glasses to the microphone. You Oneaters are great.
Well, Jackson and his partner friend Walsh said an executive from New Line Cinema had called to tell them the studio was moving ahead with The Hobbit without him. Last week, Mark Ordesky called Kim Kamens, his manager, and told him that New Line would no longer be requiring our services on The Hobbit, and the Lotter prequel, OLTR. It is a courtesy to let us know that the studio will now be actively looking to hire another filmmaker for both projects.
I'm sure that's what it felt like, a courtesy, the Get Out.
I'm sure there are a lot of filmmakers in New Zealand. Robert Piney, a New York-based representative for New Line Cinema, said the studio had no comment.
All right. Well, that's, by the way, we were just talking, who were you talking to? Peter Carlin, about the ephemeral and fleeting nature of fame, and that you can be really famous. I mean, we were talking about Michael Richards, where you can be incredibly famous, and the next week you're like busted out looking for change underneath a sofa cushion. I mean, you know, you've got Peter Jackson, who directs the most successful film trilogy in history. That movie, together they made $3 billion. He's the only guy on earth you can really imagine doing justice to The Hobbit, and then they just boot him out. So, of course, and they will inevitably go back and just continue to wring every dollar they can out of that Lord of the Rings thing, which means that they're going to make The Hobbit, and it's going to be Michael Bay, and it's going to suck. And then all the geese are going to riot. So there you go. So nothing, leave no good deed unpunished and no good film epic unspoiled.
That's Geek Watch.
Oh, there's your Geek Watch, by the way.
By Grand Thor's hammer, by the Sons of Warvan, I shall avenge
the nearing.
Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Fantastic. All right. that's wonders.
And we got a couple more days to go before the holiday, don't we?
Yes.
Well, kids at a party, Chad is a police sergeant, is beaten by angry teens.
Okay.
No, this isn't funny, as Jerry Seinfeld would say.
Sorry.
Police Sergeant Robert Compasso rounded the bend on Hall Hollow and came upon what looked to be 100 kids hanging out in the street, some of them fighting, according to an account he would later give. He waded into the crowd to break up the fight, but soon got caught in it. He was punched in the face and kicked some more. Somebody grabbed him in a headlock. As his nose bled, the crowd chanted, "More blood! More blood!"
What?
"This is how we roll in Spring Valley," one team posted.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Where is Spring Valley? Is that right next to Hidden Ranch?
Trying to figure out what state this is in.
Spring Valley, I'm pretty sure. Wait, let me think here. That sounds really familiar. I'm pretty sure Spring Valley is by, God, what is that town?
This is the Times Herald Record online.
It's, what does the bottom of the page say? Does it indicate where that is?
It does not, no.
All right. Spring Valley. It's somewhere ridiculous.
But somebody's selling a Hyundai for $9,000.
Anyway.
And a 1998 Ford Dark Explorer.
the best part, by the way, and you know every one of these kids is a white suburban kid. What are they chanting as they beat the cops?
"This is how we roll in Spring Valley."
Oh my God.
More blood, more blood.
And let that be a lesson to you. Icy hot stunters represent.
Yeah, okay.
Whatever you say. Hey, Scotty, do we have the... I know Scotty's a little overburdened today. You can't really see. He's trying to get a lot of stuff done behind the scenes. But just let's make a note to ourselves that we need that Jerry Seinfeld. Don't laugh. That's not funny. That would have worked. That would have worked several times during today's program. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, one of Iraq's best-known satirists was shot dead on his way to work yesterday. Waleed Hassan's caricature show was unmistakable for Iraqis, seeking a release in laughter from the blood and chaos around them. He often poked fun at sectarian violence, bickering politicians, U.S. forces, and power blackouts. In all, 21 Iraqis were killed in the country yesterday in attacks in Baghdad, Ramadi, and Makoba. The bodies of 26 had been kidnapped and tortured, also found on the streets of the capital. And apparently Mr. Hassan was found west in Baghdad with 3 bullet wounds to the head.
What does it really take to be the number one comedian in Iraq, do you suppose?
I don't know.
It doesn't really seem like the bar is set all that high.
He was an actor who made fun of the miserable situation in our country. Not a politician. Some people didn't like that. So he was assassinated to silence him, said one grieving fan. He was in his 40s, and Iraqis wary of the problems around them often turned to the show to watch the cast portray policemen taking bribes and government officials whose main goal in life was to line their own pockets and then leave the country.
Okay, there you go. Let's see. Rick, I'm pleased to be spelling your meat substitute of choice. I know it's not corn, but how is it spelled and where do you buy it? It's corn.
Q-U-O-R-N.
O-R-N. And you can get it like Trader Joe's.
New Seasons?
New
Seasons.
You can
get it at Fred Meyer.
Fred Meyer?
Mm-hmm.
Fred Meyer's always sold out.
Corn. Q-U-O-R-N.
It's delicious.
Yeah, it really is. And I swear to God.
Take some home for the kids.
And I am a carnivore. I am a meat eater. But you know what? You can't tell the difference. You put it on the plate next to turkey, wouldn't even know.
And you don't have to worry about those weird chewy parts that you get with meat.
No.
Because all of it's just consistent, which is good.
Some corn gristle. Here you get your bag of corn giblets.
It doesn't have that rubbery taste to it.
You know, the corn. They don't have like a neck made out of corn.
No.
By the spring... okay, a guy claims... I don't know if this is true. We're trying to find out where Spring Valley is, because apparently that's where they roll like that. This guy says in San Diego, I don't remember this, but he says it's true. In San Diego, there's a Spring Valley, which is right next to Lemon Grove. So there you go. Here's Tim Riley.
Six Muslim imams were removed from a U.S. Airway flight in Minneapolis-St. Paul and questioned by police for several hours before being released. The six were among passengers who boarded Flight 300 bound for Phoenix. The passengers initially raised concerns about the group through a note passed to a flight attendant. They took us off the plane, humiliated us in a disrespectful way. Three of them stood, and they were in doing their normal evening prayers together on the plane, as 1.7 billion Muslims around the world do. He attributed any concerns by passengers to crude ignorance about Islam. I never felt bad in my life. I never did. Six imams, six leaders of the country, six scholars in handcuffs. It's terrible.
Like 12 maids of milking?
I guess so.
That's bad. Imagine being on a plane and you're sitting there and like five Muslim guys behind you just stand up in the middle of the flight and begin chanting out loud. I mean, really, I don't wish to traffic in stereotypes, but I'm saying just imagine being an average American Johnny Lunchbucket. Really, that's... maybe that'll happen in your flight.
Oh, yeah, fingers crossed.
You should do it. You should stand up and just begin speaking a prayer in Arabic in the middle of the of the flight.
I'm a strange little white girl with pink hair.
I'm saying, but see, that would weird them out even more.
It probably would, actually.
All right. Here's Tim Riley.
The other passengers on the flight, which was carrying 141 passengers and five crew members, were rescreened for boarding. All turned out to be white. The plane took off about 3 hours after the men were removed.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, they're Caucasian. Go about your business. Nothing to see.
Meanwhile, after introducing the world to new soda flavors like fish, taco, and salmon, Seattle specialty beverage maker Jones Soda Company is offering a new flavor, green pea. Yes, green pea, along with other unusual sodas such as turkey and gravy, dinner roll, sweet potato, and antacid flavor, will be part of the company's $10 to $15 holiday pack of bottled drinks available nationwide. That's a Jones Soda, which sells traditional sodas alongside exotic flavors such as fufu berry and green apple, first introduced a holiday soda pack in 2003, getting lots of attention for its turkey and gravy flavors.
I saw there was a big...
have you ever tasted that?
No.
Fish taco.
I have.
Well, you... because when you were doing the alternative mornings, you had some.
I had mashed potatoes. It was so awful. I can still taste it. It was one of... It tasted like the rotten milk that I drank.
Is it... now, was it like a Wonka thing where it tastes exactly like the product, like the thing, though? Does it taste like mashed potatoes?
It tastes a little like mashed potatoes, but not... it's off.
Well, I better go check the fax machine and see if they send an annual.
Seriously. We've noticed that how shall I put this? We've noticed that often on this radio program, I have to choose my words carefully here, it does seem with astonishing regularity that we will speak in our typical irreverent style about a product or company. With our trademark black gallows wit and humor, often treading out there on the edge of comedy, pushing the envelope, Michael Richards style, as we so often do, and then immediately, like the next day, we'll hear from an AE, like a salesperson, hey, guess what? Guess who just signed a huge deal to advertise on your show? That, by the way, there was a big gift pack of that Jones soda sitting out there on the table yesterday morning. It was given to a couple people. I was really tempted to ask if I could have some, but I did not. I've never, that's a thing I can go my whole life without living. I don't really need to try any of your fish soda, sir.
Time for a Darwin Watch.
Here's your Darwin Watch for Tuesday in the Rick Emerson Show.
I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Don't! I ate all my cats.
Don't!
My parents won't let me use scissors.
Don't!
Another one bites the dust.
Don't!
Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust.
Hey!
Oh, my heart just stopped. Ah, there it goes.
A man is arrested for strangling a woman he met through a suicide website. This comes to us from Ida Nagano, which is a city in the state, I guess. An unemployed man was arrested for strangling a woman he got acquainted with through a suicide website. Junichiro Mini from Toyota, Aichi Prefecture, is accused of murdering Kiko Shimaicho, 27, a resident of Nagano Prefecture, city of Matsumoto.
He admitted to the allegations.
We've entered the cornholio segment of today's program.
Investigators are poised to conduct an autopsy on her body to determine the exact cause of death. At 6 a.m., local police received an emergency call from MIME. Whatever that means. From a MIME?
What would an emergency phone call from MIME sound like? Wait, hold on.
I didn't choose any of these
I'm
stories.
Stuck inside this invisible box and I can't get out.
He reported that he murdered a woman at a hotel in Kudoti District of Ida. Officials rushed to the scene and found Shimuju lying dead. The mime was taken into custody after admitting he strangled her. Investigators say the mime got acquainted with Shimuju through a suicide website and met her at the hotel, according to investigators.
Well, she was on a suicide website?
Yes, she was.
They met?
Mm-hmm.
He killed her?
Yes.
Mission accomplished. Job done. There you go.
Sometimes these stories just wrap themselves up with a tiny little mime bow, don't they?
There's your Darwin watch.
Another one bites the dust.
Let's do one more here and then we'll break.
Let's read something from America. Just days after the St. Louis Cardinals won the top honor in Major League Baseball, their hometown jumped to first place as of... Oh. This is a place that nobody wants to leave with. The most dangerous city in the United States. The Midwestern city has long been in the upper tiers of annual ranking of the world's safest and most dangerous cities, according to Morgan Quinto Press. Violent crime surged nearly 20% there in 2004, when the rate of such crimes rose much faster in the Midwest than the rest of the nation. It's just sad the way the city is, says resident Sam Dawson. On the news, you heard killings and someone's been shot. The rankings released came as the city was still celebrating the victory of this baseball game at a new stadium. St. Louis have been spending millions of dollars in urban renewal, even as the crime rate climbs.
St. Louis, Missouri?
Yeah. Is the thing with the one McDonald's Golden Arch?
I thought they just rode around on paddle boats and stuff and smoked corncob pipes and whatnot.
They might.
The whitewashed fences. Well, okay. Apparently it's a bad place.
Well, Baltimore's got to feel good about that, though.
I sometimes wonder about stories like this. Like, if people from Detroit and Baltimore or Baltimore, if they just get together and go to... Okay, now look, if you don't do this, then you really should. This is a cunning plan. Now, I'm not saying killing is right, but if there's a guy who needs killing, and sometimes those, you know, there are.
Right.
If there's a guy who really just has to be gotten rid of, if you live in St. Louis... you really ought to just, if you got a guy and you really absolutely positively got to kill him, you really got to go kill him somewhere else. You go, I mean, maybe he angers you in St. Louis, but you kill him, you dump the body in Baltimore. You live in Baltimore, it's like a vote swapping program, like they do online sometimes. If you live in Baltimore, you got to kill a guy, maybe you take him over to Detroit or something like that. You know what I mean? So that way, you know, you get the what needs to get handled gets handled, and you help your city stay out of the number one slot. And everybody's a winner, except for the dead guy, and who cares about him? Clearly, he did something to ask for it. There you go. Fantastic. On that note, let's break. We come back. We're going to answer Sarah Dillon's many questions about taking alcohol.
I am going to put it in the clear labeled quart sized plastic bag that you can bring.
That's what you want to bring, a quart of liquor onto the plane. That won't bring you under suspicion. And where do I put my quart of booze?
No, you can only use the quart sized plastic bag.
Get your hand out of my pants!
I have many, many bottles that can fit in there.
Be sure to mention that too. Say, I got lots of booze.
Well, I have to show them.
That is true. Do you?
Yeah, because you have to keep it outside of your bag. I don't know.
I don't even know the answer anymore.
Yeah, me either.
Right. Okay, we come back. We'll talk to Jim Roop, Sarah Dillon, The Weekend Geek. Later on, Dennis Pitzenbarger is going to be here as well. Plus, we read The Inquirer, so you don't have to. And the worst story ever.